We're now beginning tape two with Jose Ramon Morant, who came from Spain to America and arrived on January 1st, 1918. Ms. Morant, we were just talking about being on the ship and zigzagging all around because it was wartime.
Yeah.
Can you tell me where you slept on the ship?
Oh, we had bunks, about 100 people, three layers, one, two, and three. And if you were, I was in the middle. And good thing they were on top of me, never vomited. My cousin, the one we were talking about, he used to cry every single day.
So your cousin is traveling with you?
With
also.
Us. He was crying every day. And I said, why are you crying? Said, why am I crying? Because when I come back, I have to go through this here again. That's how he felt. And shall I carry on with him?
Talking about being on the ship?
Yes.
Yeah, sure.
Because he felt sick every day, used to throw up every day. So finally, before Christmas, we had a day that the sea was just like a lake, and he was feeling good. And I took him up to walk the deck. And the following day, we were having the paella, because we used to work we used to help the cook peel potatoes and all those things. We had nothing to do, so the cook and the chef said, for Christmas Day, I'm going to make a paella for you guys. So he made the paella. And we had a place similar to this with all those ropes of the boats that they carry there in the pile. And we took five or six of those piles and put them around the center. But we were very close together. And we invited him to eat with us, and he was feeling pretty good that day. So the paella was here, and we were all close together, and when he took the fourth spoon and put it in his mouth, he had to vomit, and he couldn't throw it on the top of this guy, and he couldn't throw it on top of this guy because he was close to it. He threw it in the paella. Everybody, I got sick that day. When I saw that, I got sick that day. And that was the end of the paella.
So much for your Christmas paella.
Yeah. Good thing the chef made sandwiches and all that for us. When he knew about it, he laughed, but he made sandwiches for all of us.
Now, except for that day, did you get sick during the...
No.
How about your father?
No, none of us. No.
You said there were about 100 people in this one room with the staff beds.
Yeah, it was open.
Were they all men? Was this divided up?
Yeah, the men were in one section and the women were in another section. Yeah.
And what parts of the ship were you allowed to walk
on? On deck, all over the deck. But there were first class and second class. We could not get in there. They carry first class and second class, but very little because nobody wanted. Most of them were all immigrants.
Why did your father choose to go third class? Because financially?
Because financially he could not afford anything else.
Do you remember how much it cost?
I think it was about $70 or $75. To come over. I'm not sure, but at that time $70, $75 was money.
Well, and as you say, especially for your family, because you're in a bad way economically,
yeah,
because
very
your father's
bad way.
Owed so much money. Did your brother in America send you money?
No, he didn't. He wasn't here long enough to send us money. But when we came over here, all the money we made, we gave it to my father, all the money, all of us. We're working like a team.
And send the money back.
So yeah.
You said that because you had nothing else to do, you sort of helped the cook in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about how you got to be able to do that. How?
Well, one time I asked the cook, you know, become friendly, you know, and I asked the cook for a sandwich, and he gave it to me. And I said, "Can I do something for you?" He says, "Yes." He says, "Do you got somebody else that can help you too?" I said, "Yes," because I talked with the other folks. After I talked with the other folks. So we got three or four fellows. We begin to go there every morning to peel this, to peel that, to do this, to do that, wash some dishes and all that. So for us, it was part of spending the day better than not doing anything. So we did that.
Being a winter time, were there any bad storms?
Well, we had one or two bad days that we had to be under deck. And the sailors, I noticed the sailors had ropes from one end to the other, and they had to strap over here, and they put the wing a ring into the rope to walk on deck. Otherwise, they could be washed out. Yeah, two days like that.
What about safety drills for you people? Because it's wartime, do you remember having to undergo any kind of training about where to go in case there was an emergency?
I don't remember. At that time, I don't remember. Today, all those drills that are made, in the other trips that I made the drills every single time. But at that time, I don't remember.
Of course, that time was probably the most dangerous to be out on the ocean.
Yeah.
All right, so you're on the ship for 28 days. Do you remember coming into New York Harbor?
Yes.
What do you remember about the approach to the U.S.?
Well, the approach was, we got close to see the Statue of Liberty that everybody came out to see. But then we had to remain outside because we could not get into the harbor because of the ice. We had to wait one day outside to have an icebreaker come outside and let us come in. And when we got into the harbor, I saw five or six men working. And I listened to them, and I said to myself, I understand a few words that they're saying. I said, English, I'm gonna learn English in no time. And it happened that they were Italians. And in account of my business, today I speak Italian fluently. But at that time, I don't know, I couldn't tell the Italian, you know, English and Italian to mean the same thing.
Tell me about, did you know what the Statue of Liberty was when you saw it?
Well, I saw it through Don Salvador, to Father Salvador. I saw pictures of the Statue of Liberty, and he talked to me about the Statue of Liberty, and they gave that friend what he made to the United States for reasons. He was a very well-known man and a very likable man. When we're talking about him before, during the Spanish Civil War, three priests, the communists got in there, and three priests were killed. And they went to Don Salvador too. And there were a few communists from the city itself, and everybody in town, and these communists themselves too, got in front of his house and told the other communists they were from out of town, says, nobody's gonna pass here. They protected him, even the communists.
So he was much loved Well, he obviously had an important influence on your life. Yeah. He certainly got you prepared for America very well. Well, tell me what happens after the ship comes into the harbor. Then what happened?
Then they took us to Ellis Island.
How did you get from the ship to Ellis Island?
I think it was in a boat, a little ferry boat. I don't remember clearly. And when we got there, boy, I think that they thought that everybody had eye disease because they went through our eyes completely. You know, we passed everything. But and at that time, there was some Spanish influence. The Spanish influence, I don't know if you heard about it. I don't know why they call it the Spanish influenza, but they examine us thoroughly too, so we pass. But I remember those white corridors and the second floor. The other day when I was there, it came back to me.
Were there a lot of people there when you were there?
Oh yes, yes. And a lot of people from other nationalities too. The place was flooded with people.
Do you remember exactly what kinds of examinations you had to undergo?
Well, my chest and my eyes. They examined me, and my parents, my father, and my brother, and no problem.
Do you remember if there was an interpreter to help you?
I think one of the men that used to be examined knew a little Spanish. Or another one broken Spanish. But we understood each other.
How long do you think you were on Ellis Island?
We got there maybe close to a day.
Did you eat while you were in Ellis Island?
I don't remember.
Now, was there somebody there waiting for you when you arrived at Ellis Island? Did your brother come down to meet you?
No. My brother was in Waterbury. He stayed there. Yeah. But everybody was complaining. We were talking to Spanish people. Everybody said, well, the eyes. The eye examination was the hardest thing that they used to go through.
Tell me, once you were released from Ellis Island, how did you get to Waterbury?
Well, they took us to the Grand Central, I remember. The Grand Central, we went to... Originally, we thought my brother was in, because he transferred himself to Waterbury. We went to Derby.
To Derby?
Derby. We stopped there that overnight, and then we communicated with my brother. And somebody took us through Bridgeport to Waterbury. And we left all baggage in Derby, and then we transferred to Waterbury.
So how did you finally find your brother through
all? Oh yeah, well, we knew some addresses over here where he was, and where he was, they knew his address in Waterbury, and we communicated. It was not a problem.
When you first got to this country, did you see anything that you had never seen before?
I said, black people that I never saw before, Chinese that I never saw before, Asian that I never saw before, and all the other different nationalities that most of them, like Italians and French, you know, they look like Spaniards, you know, they're different, but you could tell a little different, you know, it's a little different. Swedes. That's the biggest impression that I get in this country after a while. But this country, I had the feeling that this is the whole world itself over here. And I like that. I always done. Always like that.
Well, what's interesting, of course, is, I mean, you were around Spaniards in Valencia all the time, but even on the ship, you're around Spaniards.
Spaniards.
You're through the whole experience.
Everybody.
Well,
the first Italian, the group of Italian that I talked to was speaking English. They were speaking Italian.
You were really very innocent about the world.
Yeah, very.
Tell me a little bit about how your father adjusted to this country. He was here, what, a year before he went back, you said? Or
not quite a year.
Not quite. Tell me what he thought about all this.
Well, we landed in Waterbury. After about a week or two, we went to that new project that the Scoville had, and we remained there until we went back to Spain. So,
but I mean, what did he think about what he saw in this country?
Well, he said that it was a great country.
But he's really looking towards Spain. I mean, he's
and he said, it's amazing. It's amazing. He said that 2-3 times to me. It is amazing how much concrete and how much buildings and how much building that they did, they put up with so few years. Because the United States is a young country. It's just, and they build so much. Everything is great. Everything is big. Yeah, he said that to me many times. That's the impression he got. He knew that the United States was growing fast and big buildings, and at that time the Singer, I think, was the highest building in New York or at that time, 1917. And he used to make remarks, it's amazing how much they build, how much they've done. How much concrete they have used to build all this year in so little time. And in my hometown, Piles, today has changed because it's next to the seashore, and that has been a boom for quite a few years. But at that time, Piles was just like it was 1,000 years ago. The same. It didn't grow anything.
Small building
didn't grow a bit. Everything was like 1,000 years before. Yeah.
Tell me about how'd you learn English.
Well, I learned English not as good as I would like to. Going to night school.
Can you explain for me on tape just what the whole procedure of night school was? What you had to do.
Well, at that time, I applied in the papers, and I heard about night school, and I applied to go to night school, and they accepted me right away. And I kept on working very hard, but I had a hard job then. I used to work at that time, in a railroad company. They made me a foreman, the only one that could say I don't know any English. They made me a foreman. I was a little a youngster. And I had about 35 or 40 Spaniards working for me. And at night time, I used to work hard too. At night time, I used to go to school. And my teacher was Miss Hickey from here, from New Britain. And she took a liking of me, and she used to teach me sometimes after school. So stay a little longer, and I'll teach you this and that. And that. So she gave me instructions, but I was so tired that many times while in night school I fell asleep. Good many times, but then that's. Working hard, but then very very young, I met my wife, Rosario Morant, and her mother, the doctor told her that she would pass away. I had no intention of getting married or anything like that. Her mother would last 2-3 weeks the most. So I said, well, not to get married because she was to be left alone. And I was only 19 years and a half. So we decided to get married. We got married, and her mother lived with us 20 years more. 20 years more, and the doctor passed away. And I used to love her mother. Was a very intelligent person. Very, she was sick. She had a kind of arthritis that I used to carry her. Good thing she wasn't heavy. Sometimes upstairs, we used to go visiting on the second floor. I used to carry her upstairs. And she was, even though she was sick, I loved her company and her way of reasoning and her way of talking. She was a gentle lady.
Was your wife Spanish?
Oh yeah.
What was her name?
Rosario.
And her maiden name, the name before she was married to you?
Ciscar.
Can you spell that?
Ciscar. C-I-S-C-A-R.
And so her mother was Spanish too, obviously.
Yes, obviously. Oh, yeah.
Was your wife born in this country?
No. My wife came in 1920, in April 1920. April 1920.
And how old was she when she came?
She was a youngster too. She was about my age.
So am I to believe then that there was actually quite a large Spanish population?
At that time, yes, but most of them went back in 1921 or 22. There was a little depression, and most of them went back.
That's interesting, because it also reflects your father's mentality of when during the depression here, come back to Spain, things are better over here.
So we are lucky. I mean, my father and most of that group that in Gandia, it's a town named Gandia in the province of Valencia, is very famous for its products and for the land, very famous. All the products around there being sent to all over Spain. And it's a rich agricultural section. And Valencia itself, all Valencia, but oranges and all that has been famous. You heard of the Valencia oranges. And
so even in bad economic times, there's always food, and it's a very rich. Tell me what the first job was that you got here. Was that with Scoville?
Well, a few days I was before I came to Barbary, I was in Derby, Shelton, the Blumenthal. They used to make clothes for the government.
So you stayed in Derby
for a few days.
Just for a few days.
And they hired me right away.
How did you get that job? How did you know it was?
I went with some friends that used to work there, and they introduced me to the employer. I had the job. The employer job didn't ask me for my age either. So, and I liked that job. But then when they called me in Barbary to go my father called me to go to Barbary. So I told them in time. I think it was a few days. And I told them, you don't have to pay me. Because he says, no, we got to pay you. we don't do those things over here. I remember as a little young boy, I was 14. I said, you don't have to pay me because I felt guilty to give me the job, and then I was going away. So they said, no.
So then you all went to Waterbury and you cooked up with your brother who's already in Waterbury.
Yes, yeah.
Then did you get the job at Scoville?
The first job that I got is in the boarding house. A few days too. And after I got the job in the Scoville, I told them, and they told me, don't go, we'll give you more money. I said, no, I have to go. So I went. So my first job was in the Scoville Manufacturing Company.
And what was that position? What did you do there?
I used to be the water boy.
Do you remember how much you were paid?
I think it was 30 cents an hour. I think the others were making, the helm was making 30 cents an hour, too, I think.
And how long did you stay as the water boy?
Up to the time I went to Spain.
So a year?
Not quite a year.
So you said your father was here less than a year.
Yeah, not quite a year.
Now, were you living in the boarding house with your father and brothers prior to his leaving?
Yes.
Can you explain for me a little bit on tape about what it was like to live in a boarding house? I mean, what was the situation like in a boarding house?
Well, it's just like in a normal hotel. In diminutive, and then for eating, we used to have a nice big dining room, and we used to breakfast, dinner in the same place. Everybody.
Who owned the boarding house?
Who owned the boarding? A fellow that came from Spain, or from that section of the country too. I used to speak Valencian. In Valencia they speak, in Barcelona they speak Valencian and Catalan. They speak Valencian. But when we go to school, we learn Spanish. We speak Spanish in school. But outside of school and at home, we speak Valencian.
And so in this boarding house, were they all people from the Valencian area?
Yes, and I think all of them. All of them.
Were they all men?
And there was a lady. One lady came 2-3 days after I was there. And she worked there. She was there too. But they were all men.
And what did you do? Did you pay an amount weekly or monthly?
Normally they pay every week. I never had to pay because I made enough effort to cover all my expenses, but normally they pay weekly.
And then you were given 3 meals a day?
3 meals a day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Now, did you share one room with your father and 2 brothers?
No, we share one room for two. We had two and two.
So did you stay with your father?
With my youngest brother.
Your youngest brother. And what about your cousin who came over? Where did he end up?
Well, he ended up with us too, but he went to Cuba.
How soon after he got here did he go to Cuba?
After about a month or so.
Why did he go to Cuba?
Because he had an uncle, a very well-to-do family, related to his father and his father. And he used to communicate with them. And they asked him to go. And he was there for about 7 or 8 months. And he didn't like it. He came back. That was the time that I was being a foreman in the railroad company. And I hired him, told him to come down. And he came with white shoes, white tie. I said, listen, you go home. Don't work today, you go home and get dressed up like a working man. And he was the water boy for about 2-3 months there. And then he went someplace else. He was not study like I was.
Was Cuba a place where Spaniards, if they didn't come to America, might they go to Cuba?
Was that a place where a lot of people went to? Oh yes.
Had that been a consideration when your father was considering leaving?
No. Never passed our mind, no. It was the United States. Through Father Salvador and other people, you know. United States was in our imagination, just like heaven itself, before we came here.
Were there any aspects of America you didn't like those first couple of years when you first got here? Something that you just couldn't quite get used to?
Well, I have to admit that in this country I had to work, and I work in Spain. That's the difference. But still, I begin to like the country, I begin to like the way, I begin to feel like I was in, living in the world itself, because in this country I used to see people, white people, yellow people, all kind of people, and I used to communicate with them, and I made some friends with different races, and I love that.
Well, I think that in our remaining minutes, I'd like you to talk about how you got involved in the olive oil business, because I think that's very interesting.
Well, during the, in 1932, 1933, when the Great Depression, I went to Spain. When I came back, I used to work in Landers, Ferry and Clark before I went to Spain.
Where?
Landers, Ferry and Clark, in the bottle room, making thermos bottles. And we were 50 people there. And the employer told me, he said, well, if you ever come back, come to see me, you got a job. And I told him, I asked permission for them to go to Spain and try the business that my father had prepared for me and all that. So when I went over there, after a while, I didn't like to be there, so I came back. When I came back, there were only four men working in the bottle room. Out of 50, there were four. Four left. And I went there and I asked him, this is what happened. I don't like it to work over there. I'd rather work over here. And he said to me, he says, I promise you a job when you come back. There are only four men there, starting tomorrow. Whatever work comes in, it'll be divided with five people. So they gave me the job back. And all my friends that used to work there, and they were laid off, they said, don't go. But I said, well, I'm going, because the men told me, evidently, he liked the way that I was working, and evidently the superintendent wanted me to come back too. So I got the job back. But after a while, I began to say to myself, I'm not doing anything. My children are growing. So I started the olive oil business. I started the olive oil business buying from different people, two, three concerts that I knew from Spain.
Why the olive oil business, though? What attraction did that have?
Well, because something that I got in touch with my father used to have friends. The olive oil business was good. And I said, well, maybe I'll start from here. So I went to New York, bought a few cans of olive oil, brought it over here on my own, sold it. It was going pretty good. Then I said, well, I have to register. I registered as a distributor of olive oil, of other food products. And that was going better yet. And I used to do that part-time. And then I said to the company, to Landers, Ferry and Clark, I said, I'm grateful to you people that you give me the job back and all that, but I have a little part-time job that's growing, a little business of my own that's growing. I'm doing pretty good. I had to work hard. So I said, well, all right. So I started a full-time job. And I created my own brands. After I was in the business, I created my own brands. I went to Spain. I had people, to good packers, to pack my own olive oil with my own brand. And that's how I started. I started importing it, and I came to the time that I had three or four containers sometimes two containers, so it is, some, it's three. And each container had 800 cases of six-gallon cans, or 750 to 800. And that's the way they started the business. I created my own brand. I designed all that, as you have seen. And people used to tell me, you're crazy. Why don't you sell brands that are known? I said, well, no, I want to sell my own, and I want to, I want to have my quality of merchandise in it so I can promote it. And I did. My son today that has the business, just by sitting at home, my son Ramon, he can make a good living.
When you were growing up in Spain, was there an olive oil industry over there? I'm just trying to find why olive oil. Oh, we're just going to pause for this. Yeah. Okay, we're now resuming. You said to me that your son now has the olive oil business.
Yes.
I should ask you about your family. What year did you get married?
In 1924.
And do you remember the date? The month and the day?
June 9th, 1924.
And list your children for me.
Well, my oldest boy was born in 1926.
And his name is?
Ricardo.
Named after your father?
Yes. He went to college. He went to Harvard University. He's an experimental. He has a doctorate. When he was a youngster, he got his doctorate in experimental psychology. And he has written quite a bit. While the United States was in war, he was a petty officer. And he has done very good for himself and the family. He has four children. One of them, the oldest girl, is a doctor. The other one all went to the universities. And he has a beautiful family.
That's your oldest son?
My oldest son.
Okay, who's next?
My oldest boy went, did I say that my oldest boy went to Harvard University?
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
My youngest boy, Ramon, he's in charge of the business. Today it's his own business. He went to Bowdoin College, Bowdoin, in Brunswick, Maine.
It's a beautiful school.
Yeah. And he worked, when he was a youngster, he worked for, what is this concern that makes all kind of things for the ladies?
Some sort of makeup? Or?
Yeah.
Could be a lot of different companies.
Yeah. They had a factory in Cuba. So he went, they sent him to Cuba. He was the manager of the concern for about 7 to 8 months, or almost a year. But they could not put up with Castro, so they had to close the factory, and he came back. So when he came back, they wanted to send him to some other place. So I kind of wanted him to get into my business. And he says, all right, I told him, I said, listen, you get into the business. Everything we make will be for us, for the two of us, we'll divide it. And if you like it, all right, if you don't like it, then we will sell the business, because I was trying to give up. I was tired of working already. So he worked one year together, and he liked the business. So he took over the business. And he's doing very good. He has two boys and two girls, two. All of them are doing good. His wife is a professional teacher of piano. And his oldest boy, he likes music. He has a little band.
So those are your two sons. Do you have any daughters?
Yeah, I have the daughter. She's in Providence. They got three girls.
And was she born between the two boys?
No, she born the last one.
She's the youngest.
She's the youngest.
And what is her name?
Dolores. She has a beautiful place, beautiful home, beautiful husband, beautiful children. One of the girls are doing very good in New York. They have a place in New York too, for next to the river. For weekends. But now that the girls went to New York to work in New York and they get beautiful jobs. They all went to college. And
so you had the three children.
Three children. They were very good.
Well, I guess one of my final questions for you is, were there things that your mother and father taught you, philosophies in life, that have sustained you through your whole life?
Not only that I pass it, that philosophy pass it to my children, and I'm very happy to have my children pass it to their children.
What are those philosophies? What?
To do good, family togetherness, be together. Like when I was, my children when they were small, my boys when they were small, I never went hunting or fishing or in a picnic or togetherness with friends that they didn't come with me. Today, they reciprocate. When I'm around, they never go any place, they never do anything if I'm not there too. With these words, I explain everything. And that philosophy of life is my parents injected in me. I injected that to my children, and they reciprocate beautifully, and they're doing the same thing with their children. And family togetherness, there's no time that we don't get together, the whole family, the whole children, even today, at least 2-3 times a year, together. So.
Great. Well, Mr. Morant, I think that's a good place for us to end the interview. I want to thank you very much for having me.
I want to end this. I'm very grateful to USA. Very grateful.
This is Paul Segrist signing off with Jose Ramon Morant on July 5th, 1994, on a Tuesday. Thank you.